Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. 28 years ago, a nonprofit was formed to bring together people from technology, entertainment, and design and have them give the talk of their lives about ideas worth spreading. A big component of the TED philosophy is that you don't have to be there to hear the talk. It's as easy as going online. We'll post a link for you on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Anyway, that idea, TED, spread. And now spinoffs have started up around the world as TEDx Independence. TEDx Columbus started in 2009, and since then, co-founder, curator, and organizer Ruth Milligan has worked to spread even that in several directions in Central Ohio. She's with us today to first talk about what's coming up at the October 5 TEDx Columbus event, which will also be streaming live that day, I assume, as it did last year. Welcome to the show, Ruth Milligan.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
So let's talk about how this is your fourth TEDx Columbus event.
It is.
And I was wondering, just compared to the first one in 2009, how it will be different.
So we know what we're doing. By now, we are a little crazier for it. So the first year, we intended to have 8 speakers on stage and filled the Wexner Center Theater, 300 people. We just wanted to have some great ideas shared. We didn't raise money. We didn't ask for sponsors. We didn't try to do any entertainment. We didn't stream. We got them captured on video and posted, and that was the goal. This year, we'll have nearly 700 people and 18 speakers and performers at COSI, and it's become more of an experience. We'll share have lots of sharing moments in between the speaker sets, and the pinball of your brain will feel even more challenged and exhausted by the time you're done.
I remember the first conversation we had a few years ago when you first told me about this, and it was hard to kind of wrap my brain around it until I realized I'd been listening to TED Talks from out of California for a long time. When I would research something, I'd Google something, and all up would pop a TED Talk, you know, on whatever topic I was interested in. It's just people talking, but in short spurts, about something that's really important just to them, or what's the ideas we're spreading concept?
So what we say is the speakers are people with a fascinating idea, fueled by a very distinct point of view or perspective, supported by mastery and research, whether that's their whole life of watching a trend or their whole life of researching a subject. Mm-hmm. And if you have those things, then the idea with the point of view and perspective supported by the research, then you're probably ripe for a TED Talk. And we do it in 18 minutes or less. So if it's on a topic that you would never go and listen to an hour and a half lecture on, you can stand to listen to it for 18 minutes.
This is good for ADD people.
Very good. But it's good because we force the speakers, and we'll hear a little bit about that later, to really tell stories around their topics and not just give lectures. And so it's interesting and engaging and compelling, and it connects with you, hopefully, that you get the topic, even if it's something very narrow and scientific. You understand how it relates, what it's doing, how it got there, and why this person has such passion around it.
And we are going to talk more about how people prepare for this.
Yep.
Just want to remind folks you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And I'm talking right now with Ruth Milligan. She's the curator, co-founder, organizer of TEDx Columbus. If you have a question or comment for her, want to talk about TEDx Columbus, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So tell us about some of the people that are going to be speaking this year.
Sure. So our theme this year, we have a theme every year. Right. This year, its theme is The Future Revealed. So last year, we invited Jamie Green, who's the project coordinator for the Bicentennial, to give a talk about why should we care about the Bicentennial. We'll talk about IDS in a second as well. Mm-hmm. And his talk was, I want Columbus to be revealed. And so when I got our creative partners together and thought about what could be our theme this year, let's take that idea and push it into the future, because this part of the year for the Bicentennial is about the future. We were the first ones to anchor ourselves in the IDS week. And so we decided, let's really grab it and challenge ourselves to find talks that are about the future. So we'll go through a whole variety of random topics, some of which are very intentional. We'll start with who are we going to be in the future with some demography. We'll talk about the future of work. How will we work together? Will it be in isolation or collaboration? What will work feel like when you're retired? Because you may still be working. And what does that third chapter feel like to you? Because retirement now is a very different thing than it was when it actually was originally created, the concept of retirement. We're going to talk about the future of your life as it relates to food and food as it relates to disorders in your life. We have this fabulous point counterpoint. We'll talk about the future of some research around chemotherapy drugs from a researcher from Battelle, who's a safety pharmacologist. And we'll talk about things, softer things like the future of photography and the future of unused spaces in Columbus. And I will say that all of our speakers have an intrinsic tie to Columbus. That's what we love to do, is to showcase. The other events during IDS Week will bring speakers in and highlight great ideas and thinking, but our speakers are almost all from Columbus or have a very close tie to us.
Okay, since you mentioned it a few times, we really should say, what's IDS
Week? Yeah, sorry. I promised I would make sure that got included.
I had a feeling. And so, we want to know about it.
So IDS Week is the bicentennial's gift to Columbus as it finishes its year, celebrating 200. And it's a celebration of creativity and innovation. And so we announced last year at our TED event that we were moving to this week, 5 weeks earlier. And since then, there's been about 10 other events that have moved or been curated for this week. And they range from the Innovate Columbus event, which is the business focus on creativity with Tech Columbus and OSU, to Design Week that's being driven by the architects, to the collabs that the Bicentennial is doing on some specific topics that aren't addressed by these other larger events. There's a film festival about featuring Columbus as it relates to you should produce your movie here. There's the Eco Summit, which is a really, really big deal, and the MORPC is doing their summit on sustainability. And then there's Maker Faire, which is one of my other favorite, which Alex Bandar and the Idea Foundry is bringing to COSI, which Make Magazine only does in a few cities. And so we somehow have found our way to play in the sandbox together, and they've called it Ideas Week, as in, you know, ideas and
us. In Columbus.
Columbus. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. The whole thing.
So that's IDS. We're thrilled to be a part of it. And there's a lot going on. You can find out about that on their site.
I think one of the things about TEDx Columbus that's really interesting is how you've, you know, spread the wings of that idea and haven't just limited it, if you want to look at it that way, to Columbus, but have created more niche. Niche's OSU. There's a TEDx OSU. Uh-huh. Tell us about more of them. There's TEDx Women.
Sure. So there's some TED conference. The big TED conference has spread. So there's TED Global, which is in Edinburgh, and then there's they co-host the Women event, which we broadcast here. So we do three live streams a year of TED conferences. So mm-hmm. if you want to watch a TED conference, you don't want to pay the $7,500 and have to apply with 30-page application, et cetera, we provide a free opportunity to see those. So we do those every year. This last year, we saw the first university event, the TEDx Ohio State University, which was fabulous. And it felt a lot like our first year, about 8 or 9 speakers on stage, 300 people, run by students. And Jordan Edelheit should be given lots of credit for driving that. We did a TEDx Kids event with 5 to 9-year-olds. At an aftercare program at North Broadway, where they all got up and gave their ideas about how they could help the bicentennial, how they could help the city be a better place during the bicentennial. And all their talks were about a minute long.
Uh-huh.
And we'll hear in a little bit about the prison event that really was inspired by the Ohio State event.
TEDx Marion Correctional, right?
So, and yesterday I got a call from the folks at Denison that want to do one. So they're community-based. They're not topic-based. It's about communities coming together. So the community of prisoners at Marion or the communities of students at Ohio State or the larger community of Columbus coming together and sharing ideas. And it's a really great platform to do that.
You also have, now I forgot, the book club or?
Yeah. So we introduced the speakers this year. We invited five or six speakers to host a roundtable around a book that they loved, and we're going to continue that this year. The library is actually picking those books for us, the hot new books coming out that we think the TEDx community will like.
Uh-huh.
We'll continue to host those conversations because some people say, I don't want this to stop. I love this idea sharing. I love that level of conversation. And we do have a great new blog called Follow This, which is following the ideas of speakers and things that are started at TEDx and sort of just trailing through them. What happened to that millet thresher that Reed Harpam talked about in 2009? Whatever happened with Nora's project? So when you hear an 18-minute talk and it resonates with you, whatever happened, we're trying to provide some follow-up and more conversation around that as well. So
you're expecting about 700 people today. And when you said it's kind of an experiential thing, what do you mean by that?
So when you come, it needs to be with a very open mind and with the intent of being curious. And it's not a networking event by any means. You come, you listen to these ideas, and all of a sudden you're sitting next to someone who you may have never met before and inspired to have a conversation about that idea, not necessarily, oh, where are you from and what do you do? So we'll provide inspiration for people to have conversation with each other. We do some interesting things at lunch that force people to meet one another, as Anne knows, so you can't break the secret.
Right.
And because the bottom line that Chris Anderson from TED really believes is that it's really better when you do it, when you watch him and listen to him together, that you can sit in your office and watch a TED talk all day long, but it doesn't have the same processing and understanding as if when you're in the lunch line and say, what'd you think about that talk? And that perspective comes out and great dialogue happens. So I will say that because we're almost sold out, we will have a live stream at Studio 35 for free for anybody that wants to come and watch the whole day from 9 to 4:30.
So they can be in a group then?
They can be in a group. The concessions will be open. Pay as you go. There's no registration required. We know that it's an expensive ticket, and we appreciate that. It affords us the ability, though, for everyone to hear the talks at some point because we get to post them online.
And before we go on, people give the talks for free.
That's correct.
You are not paid.
That's correct.
You have a part-time executive. No one is paid except you now have a part-time executive director.
Right. So our event coordinator, we have a grant that supports her. We cover which is essentially executive director.
Right, she should
be called that. She really runs the show,
Queen
Allison.
Yeah, right.
She's been with me since she was a part-time intern 4 years ago. So the way in which the Nancy Kramer, my co-curator and founder, really has established a fund at the Columbus Foundation to build some sustainability around this. That's an important leg to our three-legged stool. And sponsors step up and bring their employees and want to be a part of it and have affinity. And then the audience pays ticket price. It's $100 to attend. It's the most that we can charge. We offer an opportunity to donate to the TEDx Youth event, which I should mention is 2 days before, which we hadn't mentioned yet.
Nope.
Which is also at COSI, and that's a phenomenal day of youth talks, people who are, I won't say kids, but young adults who are 18 to 25, giving talks to high school students. And we love that event because we're actually going to pick a speaker from TEDx Youth and bring them to TEDx Columbus 2 days later. We did that last year with great success.
The TEDx Youth thing, though, how do you get high school's kids out of school?
So Andy Eichley from COSI works his magic because COSI really curates that event and really drives it as the license holder now. Some of them actually bring whole classes and make it a part of the curriculum for the day. And then the older ones who are giving talks are usually in college and can break away for a few hours to go give a talk. So it's not a huge group, might be 100, 150, so it's not 700. And it's highly curated. They do lots of mentoring groups and conversation after. They only have talks in the morning. And then they have sort of how do you get an idea out of your brain? How does it actually get going? So it's a much different day than we have. So anyway, and then the third part is the speakers. So we've got sponsors and we have audience and then the speakers who are not paid and cannot pay, and they can't promote or sell anything either. It's forbidden. There's very little in the program about them and their background. You can click on the website and sort of go deeper on who they are and what mm-hmm. they might do for a living. What we do is highlight their idea.
The idea, right. The idea we're sharing.
Right.
My guest is Ruth Milligan. She's co-founder, organizer, curator, I guess co-curator for TEDx Columbus. When we return, we'll be hearing more about how the process starts and how it works and how it wraps up when somebody decides to give a talk about the talk of their life about something worth sharing. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
In China, a political murder mystery winds down. The Communist Party leader-to-be vanishes for a couple of weeks, and the face-off with Japan over uninhabited islands in the East China Sea. I'm Neil Conan, China in Transition. Rob Gifford will join us. Plus, the parent trigger. What really happened when parents mobilized to take over a failing school? Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 to 4 on 89.7 NPR News. 65 degrees with showers and thunderstorms possible. It should be tapering off after 2 p.m., a high of 68 today. Clouds for tonight, a low of 54. Sunshine and a high near 70 for Friday. Support for 89.7 comes from the Sherrington Group, financial planners and investment managers, providing financial advice and client-focused solutions to help grow and preserve clients' wealth. The Sherrington Group, planning for success, managing for life, at sherringtongroup.com. And All Sides continues here on 89.7 NPR News.
We have been talking about TEDx Columbus, an independent offshoot of the TED Talks. They started 28 years ago in California and have since spread as independent TEDx events around the globe. In a TED and in a TEDx talk, speakers are given a time limit for the talk of their lives that are supposed to be about ideas worth spreading. The maximum length is 18 minutes. Sometimes it's much less. The challenge of fitting those ideas and the talk of one's life into that time frame is more daunting than it sounds. Still with us is Ruth Milligan. She's co-founder, curator, and organizer of TEDx Columbus. Ruth, once again, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Ann, for having all of us.
Joining us now is Rich Bowers. He's a video producer and documentarian who's produced a film about the process of a TEDx Columbus talk. Welcome to the show, Rich.
Thanks. Good to be here.
First, let's listen to a clip from the film. It's one of your subjects talking about how she wrote her TED talk.
But I knew for me I needed to write my whole talk first before I could get down to under 3 minutes. And in fact, when I started, I wasn't thinking under 3 minutes. Because I was really using this wasn't just a TEDx talk. This was a structure for the creative process itself.
And that was somebody who had actually auditioned for a talk in TEDx, which is the first time you've done that.
Right, we didn't talk about that.
You don't have open auditions.
The first year we've ever done an open audition.
Okay, yeah, this year.
So in August, we invited anyone to come and pitch for 3 minutes their idea.
You had one slot open for that.
We invited one speaker, and then we found a performer from that event
as well. How many people came to audition?
About 30.
Okay. Were you happy with that?
Delighted.
Yeah.
It was the same night as Pachakachak got rescheduled. So it was fabulous that we had two great successful events like that on the same night. I was actually supposed to speak at Pachakachak and couldn't. And so Rich came and really has been documenting the pathway of some of those people that not document the pathway of those that didn't make it. But, you know, why didn't some of those people get selected? We had a panel of three judges. And we went through, I was sort of facilitating, but the judges really had a hard time. It was a tough process.
So, Rich Bowers, why a documentary about something as fundamental as giving a talk?
Well, because it's not as giving a talk is not a fundamental thing. It turns out that there are a variety of ways to do that, and people approach it in a variety of ways. And oftentimes people come to the TED process thinking, well, I'm just going to do it like I have always done it. And it turns out that that's not really the way it works at all. And as the clip you just played indicates, she had spent some time just preparing for the 3-minute audition. And then once she got past that and was asked to participate in the full TED, since that time, I've been videoing her process, and we have had conversations about how she has had to rethink, reshape, remold her thought process and the idea to make it work and to communicate it and to give it, as Ruth says, the passion and the feeling, you know, all the other aspects of a TED Talk that you want to shoot for.
Now, I recognize her voice, of course. It's Jan Allen. She's the one that...
She won the audition.
Won the audition. And how long is her talk going to be? So she went from 3 minutes for the audition
She'll
to...
She'll give about a 12-minute talk.
Which is pretty long.
Yeah.
It's getting up there.
Right.
But still, 12 minutes.
Well, and when you've prepared a 3-minute audition that you think pretty much captures the essence, and then all of a sudden, now you have 12 minutes to pretty much capture the essence, it becomes a whole different kind of a challenge.
So you covered, well, let's hear another clip from the documentary first, because that's a lot of fun. This is from Rich Bauer's documentary. It's a clip of a subject from the TEDx open audition as well.
Right.
I have inspired thousands thanks to technology, and I'm now on a mission to activate a new generation of tech-powered trailblazers.
Okay, that's actually from the audition itself.
Right.
And why did you include that? What did that bring to the film?
Well, first of all, let me clarify. The documentary hasn't been produced yet. I'm still in the process
of collecting
material. Okay. So these were clips that that I pulled from the audition that sort of indicate... We know that Jan was asked to participate. Some of these other people were not asked to participate. And I think this is a good example of the restriction against selling. This lady, you know, was on a mission to do something, and a lot of what she was talking about was her accomplishments and that sort of thing. And it just, that's not the way to approach it.
It's funny because if you think about it, though, that's what we're all trained to sort of do is sell ourselves all the time. And selling an idea is a very different concept.
You're right. Absolutely.
And there is a balance. The speakers are very sensitive to not want to sell their ideas, but that's what we've asked them to do. So that we have to sort of coach them to say, it's okay to tell us a little about your mastery and what brought you here. And if you have a solution to this problem, tell us about it. We've had a speaker in the past that was afraid to do that because I didn't want to sell.
Because it was presumptuous? Or...
Yes. And so, but that's why, you know, that's why we want you up there. But people that came to the audition that talked about what they do for a living, without the mastery and the research that sort of brought it close to an idea, didn't make it. It was very clear. It was just them just talking about what they do. And then the other was the conversation in your head, which was...
What's that?
My favorite quote. Sorry to take the...
Yeah, that's fine.
Which is that every conversation we have is with ourselves, and on occasion someone else is involved. It's a Susan Scott. She wrote Fierce Conversation. And some people showed up. Oh, I heard about this yesterday, and so I'm going to tell you what's in my head. That doesn't work either, right?
Yeah. In fact, we have a clip, just sort of a collection of some of those kind of comments as well, if you choose to play it.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about a documentary that's in production. It's going to be produced about TEDx Columbus, and more specifically about how somebody goes about preparing for a TEDx talk, the process they go through, because it indeed is a process. If you have a question or comment for my guest, Ruth Milligan, she's co-founder, curator, and organizer of TEDx Columbus, and also Rich Bowers, the documentarian, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So are you... What have you learned about the process, Rich Bowers, from following it in this way?
Well, I've learned that the course of an idea through this process takes many shapes and appearances as it goes through working and reworking the idea to be able to tell it in this special kind of way. One of the things that we've discovered in talking with some of the speakers is that some of them have actually discovered aspects of their idea that they hadn't suspected before, just by virtue of going through this process. So it's very interesting just to see. I've always been very interested in creativity itself in any case. So here's an idea. How does it start, and then how does it actually come out the other end and become something? And in this case... it goes through a torturous process sometimes.
Well, tell me about some of the torture.
Well, one of the subjects that I'm working with is a woman who's traveling the world as we speak. That's her job. She's a consultant. We've the interviews I've done with her have been via Skype from Seattle and Washington, D.C. and Oxford, England, and last week, Shanghai. And every time she lands and she's doing her job, she takes a few minutes and asks the group that she's working with if they'd mind if they listen to a TED Talk that she's working on. So she's gotten feedback internationally, interculturally, about her ideas and how she's presenting them. And she's incorporating all that feedback. And the idea, I'll tell you, has changed substantially, improved. But it's very different than what she thought it was going to be when she started out.
And how long is her presentation going to be?
She'll be 18 minutes.
18 minutes, so she'll be a longer one. Mm-hmm. So she's getting total strangers to listen to her for essentially 18 minutes.
And then I'll just add that there's another speaker who's got a torturous process of getting his content approved.
Okay.
To deliver.
So, well, tell us about the approval process. This is curated. This is, you just don't go up there and your lips.
It depends upon what idea you're talking about and who you work for and how.
Oh, I see.
How consequential the information might be.
I see.
So I can't say too much about it because I would be revealing.
So this is about his work how much he can talk about it.
But yet another speaker revealed insight that he didn't appreciate the context of his work until he put this talk together, meaning working so narrowly, deep on what he's working on until we really reveal insight against what's the larger thing that you're doing, it didn't occur to him. So everyone goes through this process. You know, David Staley, 2 years ago, who's going to be on stage with me this year as a co-host, by the way, said it was the most torturous talk he'd ever given. And at the speaker reception last week, we had a few women say, my 18 minutes of terror. I mean, it's because you can't have notes.
Right.
You speak without a podium. It's got to be really compelling, and not to scare all the speakers who are listening right now, because most of them come to me and say, why did you scare me?
Really, it's no problem. Don't worry about it.
So what Rich is talking about is the syndication process, which is I've got to talk and I've got to syndicate it. I've got to share it and see if it works and get feedback and then continue to revise it, which is the way any talk should be given anyway. But in the TED process, it's almost, you know, it's really important.
And some people do that themselves, the old talking to the mirror kind of thing, or talking or walking the dog and working it out in your head. But it is really valuable. I think it's probably essential that you have other people hear it and give you that kind of feedback, because it's not just the content, it's the structure. And it's the emotional, the part that the grabber part of it that's going to get my attention and make me want to listen. That's really key. And you can't do that without having other people involved.
I would just add that Ken Robinson, who is the most watched TED speaker ever.
Which one is that?
He's the one who talks about creativity in schools and education, is actually coming to Columbus on the 4th to talk at Innovate Columbus. And if you listen to his talk, he's been watched almost 15 million times. So the point is that your talk, if it's done right, could really have great breadth and depth of attention. And so that's sort of the weight that they come with, saying, my talk really could go viral because of the production behind it. And so there's that, it's a challenge inside them.
We aired some of the TED Radio Hour programs over the summer. I don't think they're airing anymore, but we did it. And it was interesting to hear the speakers talk about their talk and how they got there. There's a discovery process, not only in producing it, but then in talking about it later, Ruth. I mean, afterwards, do they all just go, oh my gosh? And even then after actually giving the talk, because you haven't gotten to that point yet, right?
Correct.
That's the next stage. But after the talk, what do they say?
They're relieved. More than anything. Delighted.
Well, I know that feeling.
Elated. We got them all together last Thursday. We used to do it the day before, but someone said, you know, this would be better if it was done. And we made them all listen to each other's ideas and talks. And it's the most revealing, fabulous moment. Kramer and I love the sharing that goes on between them. But that takes away a lot of the mystique. So when they get there and they're hearing everyone else's talks, it's not like, oh, wow, that idea is so amazing or compelling or I don't agree with it or whatever's going on. They've already sort of done that.
Yeah.
So they don't have to worry about. So there's not a lot of surprise anymore. I think they're all very excited, and the energy in the room and amongst them is like anything else we see, really.
So you did an audition this year, which must have been really interesting for Rich, a ton of material that way, but usually you don't. You go to people and ask them, how do you find them, and how did you incorporate that into your how were you going to incorporate that aspect of it into your film? Ruth, though, first.
Well, we pick the first 10 or 12, 11 speakers through our normal process, which is I call a push and pull. So we go out and pull people in that we've identified and sort of watching or have, you know, sort of come on our radar screen. And then people push people to us through a nomination process. Mm-hmm. And so we had maybe, I don't know, 60, 70, 80 people nominated to speak. So we have a small group of a team that goes through those, and then it becomes a puzzle because it's an end-to-end day. And so when we talk about the open audition, you know, we're okay with one speaker in that slot or two. We were going to go up to two, but we just decided one. But everything else is well organized, meaning that no two talks are the same. We have a lot of balance in gender and race and age and experience. We want it to be that sort of ebb and flow day for people. I related to those four people, but I didn't to those four. But that may be totally different than what you related to. So it's a hard mix to find. And then the open audition, Rich has a different perspective than I do because I was sort of facilitating it. But who came and who thought they were?
Right. I think it'll be interesting to see in the future if we go ahead with more open auditions, whether people learn from that experience, from if we have repeaters who come and realize, wow, you know, 6 o'clock that morning. Maybe
this year
not
I'll be Miss America.
Yeah, exactly. It'll all be different this time around. But that's, there was a lot of unknowns involved in this. So people showed up not really understanding what to expect or what was being looked for or whatever. Now that information is going to start to get out.
And so. I think Jan won because she was really prepared.
Yeah.
You could just tell.
That would be Jan.
That would be. Yes.
And also, I was wondering, she went to TEDx Columbus last year, I know. Did that make a difference in the presentations? Were people who actually had seen a TED or TEDx?
I think that the people that come to us who have been are much more informed about what their idea, how they should shape their idea and present it, number one. Or those who have been usually nominate people who are more suited. So when I talk to the big TED folks about nominating people to the big stage, if you haven't been to TED, it's a tough thing for them to take a nomination because they want people who've been there and understand what it feels like. And so we would say that we're at that point now where, you know, when somebody talks negatively about the event, it's inevitably someone who hasn't been. Because once you've been, it's hard to find. You may not like every speaker. But
there's a little something for everybody.
Yeah, that's the idea.
We've been talking about TEDx Columbus and the concept of TED. It's an independent offshoot of the TED Talks. They started 28 years ago in California. They've since spread as independent TEDx events around the globe, including in Columbus. Just if you're just joining us, a TEDx or a TED Talk, speakers are given a time limit for the talk of their lives that are supposed to be about ideas we're spreading. The maximum length is 18 minutes. Sometimes it's much less. The challenge of fitting the ideas and the talk of one's life into that time frame is more daunting than it sounds. That's what we've been talking about with Ruth Milligan, co-founder, curator, and organizer of TEDx Columbus, and also Rich Bowers. He's a video producer and documentarian. He's working on a documentary about the creative process of a TEDx Columbus speaker. Rich Bowers, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
When we return, we're going to talk about TEDx Marion Institutional. Marion Correctional. I knew it was hit that wrong. Marion Correctional. TEDx Marion Correctional. Yes, we are talking about a prison in Marion, Ohio. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, how electricity functions in our bodies. We talk with physiologist Frances Ashcroft, author of the new book, The Spark of Life. Her groundbreaking research in 1984 involving electricity in the body led to a major new treatment for neonatal diabetes. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Support our station right now and register to win an iPad. Our fall membership drive begins soon, and by making your pledge now, you'll be automatically entered to win an iPad. No pledge is necessary. Entries are only accepted at WOSU.org. The deadline is October 11th. Thank you for supporting 89.7 NPR News. Rain and possibly a thunderstorm today, tapering off this afternoon, a high of 68. Clouds tonight, a low of 54. Support for 89.7 comes from Ohio State's John Glenn School of Public Affairs, offering continuing education and graduate degree programs designed for the working professional. More details about the programs and upcoming information sessions are online at glenn.osu.edu. And support for 89.7 comes from the Jazz Arts Group, America's oldest not-for-profit jazz organization, celebrating their 40th anniversary season with a two-night performance with legendary Tonight Show band leader Doc Severinsen. Doc and the Columbus Jazz Orchestra will play September 28th and 29th at the Southern Theater. Details at jazzartsgroup.org. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We've been talking about TEDx Columbus. It's an independent offshoot of the TED Talks. They started 28 years ago in California and have since spread as independent TEDx events around the globe. In a talk like this, speakers are given a time limit to keep and give the talk of their lives about an idea we're spreading, and the maximum length is 18 minutes. Since founding TEDx Columbus 4 years ago, Ruth Milligan has worked to spread the concept to all sorts of venues and demographic groups. There's a TEDx OSU, there's a TEDx Youth, and now the new TEDx Columbus Readers Roundtable. And on September 16th, this past September 16th, the concept spread to a state prison in Marion. We heard a clip from that event at the top of the hour. Let's hear it again.
But I can stand proudly before you today as a living, breathing example that change is possible, but only if the one in need of it believes that it'll work.
That's from a TEDx Marion Correctional talk entitled From Monster to Man. It's by Johnny, initial H. He's an ex-death row offender. Still with us is TEDx Columbus co-founder and curator Ruth Milligan. Ruth, thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks, Ann.
Joining us now is Jody Davis. She helped organize the TEDx Marion Correctional event on September 16th. Jody is director of the Win-Win Institute for Response-Able Reentry in the Lifeline Reentry Community Center at Marion. Welcome, Jody.
Thank you.
The TEDx Marion Correctional was entitled A Life Worth Living with a question mark at the end. A life worth living? What inspired that?
The men inspired that because there is some question about whether your life is worth living when you're incarcerated. And they wanted to raise the issues of that, but also they wanted us to consider whether our life is worth living, whether we out here are living the lives are worthwhile out here.
So the talks at Marion Correctional on September 16th weren't just for inmates.
No.
They were for anyone to listen to.
That's correct.
And you started this, I read, by downloading TED Talks to take into the prison for the inmates. And I was wondering what their reactions were to the talks when you'd bring them in before they knew they were going to have an event.
They became TEDx or TED aficionados. I couldn't bring in enough. They'd stand with their hands on their hips and look at me when I came in every morning to see if I had brought them a CD with more TEDx talks.
What do you think it was about them that appealed to them? Because, you know, they're just people talking.
They inspire new ideas. They have things in there for them to think about. They have things to talk about. They inspire them. They're amazing or intriguing, and Everybody needs that, especially when you're incarcerated. Anything like that is good.
And then the structure of it, do you think that helps? Like it helps anybody having the variety of length and having, especially having it less than 18 minutes or less, no matter what?
That's correct. Yeah, I have a computer lab. We have a computer lab, and we put them on the computers in the computer lab, and we put a little sign up that said, if you're tired of learning how to do Microsoft Word Office, you would be able to take a few minutes. And since they were short, they could take a few minutes and just look at a TED Talk.
I should add that they don't get TED.com at the prison.
They don't have ready access to it. They don't get on the internet, right?
That's right. Correct. So here's a TEDx event organized by guys who have never been on the site.
Have never actually seen what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. We saw the live stream of the Ohio State one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so that's how you showed them what to do. How did it come about that they decided to do a TEDx event at Marion Correctional?
Well, we were watching the live stream from Ohio State University, and Wayne, who's one of the organizers, looked at me and said, "We can do that. We can do that."
Wayne Snitsky.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. He said, "We can do that." And so I decided to see if we could, and we did.
What kind of person, Ruth, says, "We can do that"? As someone who was one of those people that said it, what do you think set someone like Wayne Snitsky apart?
A little bit of a dreamer, someone who has insatiable curiosity and who wants to share ideas. And that's sort of what drove me. And I think that Wayne and I have that in common.
Have you met Wayne?
I have.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Let's listen to another cut. This one is from a talk entitled Reconstructing Trust. It's by Doug Crabb, an ex-offender.
Well, I'm here to tell you that some of those people are the most responsible, giving, trustworthy men I've ever met. Yet these are the men that I trust my life with, the life of my children. And do you know what? They're all doing life. See, the uniqueness of trust is that it takes a lifetime to maintain, yet in a split second can be lost forever.
Now, we described Doug Crabb as an ex-offender, so he's not actually an inmate in Marion Correctional now?
He was.
He was.
And he has been out for about 3 years.
So this isn't just inmates speaking then at this event. There were lots of different, you tried to bring in a lot of different kinds of people. How did Wayne and his partner, I guess, in crime, Dan Royston, how did they, another inmate, I said partner in crime, didn't
That's
I?
Good. That's
okay,
good.
They'll sorry. Laugh. Sorry, Dan. Sorry.
They'll laugh.
Okay. Not only was it cliche,
glad
it was an appropriate
that.
Cliche. But so how did they curate their program?
We wanted to have a wide variety. We've been told since then that it wasn't wide enough and that the next one has to be wider. But we had offenders. A variety of different kinds of offenses and lengths of sentences. We wanted to have an ex-offender, and Doug came to mind because we knew him and knew that he would be powerful. We also invited the warden and an ex-warden and the current director of the department and a former director. And then we also had Jim and Nancy Petro. He was the ex, he was a former attorney general.
Mm-hmm. He's now the
chancellor.
Chancellor, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Regents.
Of the Board of Ohio Board of Regents,
That's
right?
That's correct. But we decided that we wanted to have all those perspectives, and all of those people have a perspective on incarceration and reintegration.
Well, that sounds like a lot of variety to me. What was lacking in someone's opinion?
Well, we were told that the security people, the COs, the corrections officers, mm-hmm. and some of the other people who have jobs in the prison would like to have been represented and might be in the future.
Had that not occurred, or?
We were so focused on what we were doing that never occurred to us. And we filled our slate very quickly and didn't even think to include anybody else. And the other voice that we want to hear again is family and friends. So that will be in the future.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about TEDx Marion Correctional with Jody Davis. She's one of the organizers of TEDx Marion Correctional. From the outside, one of the outside organizers. Also with us, Ruth Milligan, co-founder, curator, and organizer of TEDx Columbus. You have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have another cut from the September 16 event. It's at TEDx Marion Correctional. Let's listen.
We need to understand that people can change and people are changing. And let me tell you this. I believe that the single greatest obstacle to our continued success is this. And I hate to say this, folks, but I believe it in my heart. That we have too many people in this state, in this country, that believe that because someone's wearing blue, they're less than human.
That's from a talk entitled Systemic Sense of Hope by Gary Moore. He's the director of the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Correction. What did he think when he was first invited to this? Jody?
I don't know what he thought. What he said was, yes, that he would be glad to do that. And
because these guys have busy schedules.
They do. They do.
There was no...
No, everybody that we asked.
No pawning you off on somebody else
or
anything?
No, everybody wanted to be a part of this.
Did he know what it was?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And what was it like helping, let's talk about the inmates that were, you know, inside. What was it like helping them through that creative process that we were talking about earlier with
Rich Bowers?
I was listening
to that and thinking, oh my gosh, this, because we had auditions. Mm-hmm. We put posters up on the locks at where they live, in their dorms where they live, inviting people to apply. We had 40 applications. We actually had 20 who did a 3-minute video that was then sent out to various people to review. And from that, we chose 6 speakers from inside. And they practiced for 3 months. They practiced every Monday and officially every Monday, but then on and on and on at every opportunity they practiced.
What do you think motivated some of them?
They wanted to do it right. They wanted to be good. They wanted to be able to make their point.
But I mean motivated them in the first place.
In the first place, they have a message. They have something they want to say. They want people to hear them. They want people to know that they have ideas worth spreading, that they are not just men in blue, but they're men who have passions and concerns and a life worth living.
Did any of them surprise you?
The people that applied surprised me.
In
on September
way?
16th, I wasn't surprised
because
I'd watched them practice.
Heard it all, seen it all by then.
Yeah.
But what surprised you about who applied?
There were some difficult stories that were told, and they were willing to tell their stories. There were several people there who had committed terrible crimes, and they were willing to talk about that. It surprised me when people are that brave.
I guess, you know, I wonder if you felt like you wished you could have had everybody do it, if it was one of those examples, because when people show the initiative to apply to do something like that in a situation like that, you want to just say, yeah.
The
but
cut
you
was
couldn't.
Very hard. That was right. We had to go down. We had to cut it down to the right number. And then we also, all of our speeches were exactly 10 minutes.
Why was that?
Because we had many, and we didn't cut it as much as we would originally thought because of exactly what you said. It was hard. And so since we had so many, we had to be short.
But you made it all equal.
They all had 10 minutes, everybody.
What, Ruth, can you pitch in here?
I thought it was a great way to start for
okay.
them. They'd never done it before. It's the first, we haven't mentioned this, it was the first adult prison TEDx in the world.
Okay.
There had only been 2 prison events the TEDx had, and they were both in juvenile facilities. And from what I can tell, they were about an hour or two long. This was a 6 or 7 hour event. Half of the people who attended were outside. I was one of them, and half were inside. So we were sitting amongst the inmates, amongst family of the inmates, amongst people who were in the correctional facility. It was a very dynamic, passionate group. So the 10 minutes was terrific. And I would say that, you know, we give people 18 minutes on our stage who have a lifetime of research and perspective. These guys have a lifetime of research and perspective, but it's really their own experience. It's not, I discovered how to solve this drug, you know, interaction problem with chemotherapy, you know, and it mm-hmm. takes a little bit longer to explain that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in 10 minutes, you can get out a very, very compelling idea. And when these talks go online, I won't be surprised if they are widely, widely watched. I will just say that for me, I've been to about 20 different TED or TEDx events personally, and I've never come home and just cried because it was so overwhelming. The experience and the talks and the stories were so wholehearted. I'd never heard such a collection like that before.
That's an interesting community to bring together. Who were the outsiders that were brought in? How did you invite them?
The guests?
Yeah.
We published the same way TEDx is published anywhere on Facebook.
Anyone
could come. Yes. Yes. We promoted it through our friends, of course, and their Facebook pages. But it was in several newsletters at Ohio State. A whole class came from Ohio State. Jordan Edelheit, the other organizer, is a student at Ohio State, and one of her classes came. We had people come from Michigan, from West Virginia. I don't know how they heard about it, but we just had quite an eclectic group. Family, as Ruth has said, family and friends were invited also.
I met a criminology PhD professor who'd never been inside a prison. This was his first chance.
Well, now that's really interesting. That's very interesting.
So it was a fabulous cross-section.
You talk about how to keep people going for a whole day at a TEDx Columbus event. 6 hours is nothing to sneeze at. How do you keep the ball in the air for that long with people? I mean, you had to feed them. You had to do stuff with. You had to entertain them a little bit. And you were locked in.
We couldn't leave.
That's right. We locked them in. They got there at 11:30
TEDx Columbus
and they stayed until 7. Really, so we were actually there for 7.5 hours.
Yeah.
We had a lot of opportunity for them to talk, structured opportunity for them to talk with each other, for people to talk together. Mm-hmm. We trained 25 men in blue, mm-hmm. to be what we call tour guides, escorts, and facilitators, and they helped to make things happen in the crowd. After the talks, we had what we call speed TEDxing. Instead of speed dating, we had speed TEDxing, which was small groups where the talkers got to meet with small groups for some discussion. And then we did the culinary-based networking retreat in Innovation Alley, which is a terrible name, but it was a wonderful event.
And
that was out in the garden. We have a beautiful garden, okay. And we were out in the garden, and we had prison food that was not exactly prison food, but we did feed people dinner. Uh-huh. And we had exhibits out there for people to look at, all the other things that happened that they might be interested in, and then lots of wonderful conversation.
And I know you did a little bit of entertainment last year. Did you bring in a little entertainment, too?
We had a band, and we had some music, and we had some slam poetry and various things of that sort.
It's a good balance.
Sorry, nice. I missed it. That is TEDx.
The next one's in April.
Okay, the next one's April.
And they're ready to do another, so they got the bug.
Well, we've been talking about TEDx Marion Correctional with Jody Davis, organizer of TEDx Marion Correctional, one of the outside organizers. We're two inside organizers. Two inmates actually organized it. Jody, thanks for joining us today.
I was glad to be here.
And also Ruth Milligan, curator and organizer, co-founder of TEDx Columbus. Ruth, once again, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Anne. It's always fun.
Every year you bring us another story, so
try.
Keep it up. If you want to learn more about TEDx Columbus, it's almost sold out, but I guess there are still a few tickets, and you can also view it at Studio 35 during the live feed. You can learn more about all of that if you go to the link at our website at WOSU.org/allside. You can watch the show again tonight if you want to listen to it again. You can listen to it again, at least, when we rebroadcast tonight at 8 p.m. You can discover more about the show at WOSU.org/allsides. From our website, you can listen and watch the show live weekdays 10 a.m. to noon. You can also explore the All Sides archive, which includes audio, video, and podcasts for every show. That's at WOSU.org/allsides. The All Sides staff worked hard this week. Associate producer Amy Jurovich, All Sides assistant producer Corinne Glackler, All Sides production assistants Katie Higgins, Leticia Wiggins, All Sides volunteer Rose Joe, our interim producer, Amy Corthain, with video production by Rich and Amber Karsmitsky. Thanks so much for listening today. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media. We'll be right back.